Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. President Biden and former President Trump now have enough delegates to secure their party's presidential nominations. And with all eyes geared toward the November election, NPR's Miles Parks tells us this year there's a new twist to voting conspiracy theories.
NPR acquired a two-page memo being circulated by an attorney named Cleta Mitchell. She's a former Trump advisor, and she's been influential in pushing all sorts of stolen election narratives since 2020. The memo is titled, quote, "The Threat of Non-Citizen Voting in 2024. And it falsely implies that there are all these loopholes in the election system that undocumented immigrants are exploiting. Now, there is no evidence to support that theory, and Mitchell did not respond to an email request for comment.
NPR's Miles Parks. The House is gearing up to vote on legislation today that could lead to a ban on one of the most widely used apps in the world. TikTok has 1 billion users worldwide. Nearly a third of them make a living from it, with an estimated 170 million users in the United States. NPR's Windsor Johnston spoke to some creators on the site who are outraged about the controversial bill.
Oh, hi there, and welcome to Minnesota Salads That Aren't Really Salads.
This is the TikTok video that made 42-year-old Amber Estensen, a.k.a. that Midwestern mom, go viral.
Today's ingredients for Snickers salad. That's right. In Minnesota, Snickers and apples can make a salad. I never said it was healthy.
The quirky salad video was an instant hit. And now, with 1 million followers on TikTok, Estensen says the site is her lifeline.
A ban, you know, it's unrealistic and I think absurd. It would mean, you know, an income loss.
The bipartisan legislation would force TikTok's China-based parent company to sell the app due to national security concerns. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
Stocks open mixed this morning as Dollar Tree announced its planning to close hundreds of stores this year. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average did open in positive territory.
Dollar Tree lost $1.7 billion in the most recent quarter. The discount retailer says it plans to close nearly 1,000 underperforming stores that operate under the Family Dollar name. Like other retailers, Dollar Tree has struggled as penny-pinching customers focus on essential items, which often carry lower profit margins than discretionary purchases. Asian shares were mostly higher overnight, following a trend in U.S. markets. The S&P 500 index hit a new record high on Tuesday. And what's a five-letter word for copycat? The New York Times, which owns the popular Wordle game, is accusing some rivals of copyright infringement. Mimic? Clone? Four more tries. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 74, the Nasdaq off 109. This is NPR News. The French lower house of parliament has overwhelmingly endorsed President Emmanuel Macron's new tough strategy of unwavering support for Ukraine until Russia's defeat. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley has that story.
The non-binding vote passed 372 in favor, 99 against. Opposition came from the far left. 100 lawmakers on the far right abstained. Far-right leader Marine Le Pen said she refused the despicable false choice between being pro-Macron or pro-Putin, referring to Russia's president. In a rousing speech, French Prime Minister Gabriel Attal said to abstain is to betray Ukraine, Europe, and the French spirit of resistance. Attal ended with Ukraine's rallying. I say to France, in the name of the government of France, from the depths of my heart, which beats for the values of liberty.
Slava Ukraini!
Slava Ukraini! Glory to Ukraine. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
The Olympic flame is scheduled to arrive in Marseille on May 8th, ahead of the 2024 Summer Games in Paris. The mayor says the flame will overnight in Paris City Hall on July 14th, Bastille Day. Speaking of the Olympics, people watching the events in the U.S. through NBC Universal's coverage will see a couple of additions to the usual team of announcers. Singer Kelly Clarkson and NFL legend Peyton Manning will join commentator Mike Tirico to host the opening that airs July 26th on NBC and Peacock. The NBC Today Show hosts Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb will also serve. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Annie E. Casey Foundation, using research and evidence to develop solutions that help families and communities create a brighter future for young people. More information is available at aecf.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we are still experiencing a few technical difficulties here after the big, strong winds that move through our area, but we're going to make it work. On today's show, the Caregiver Resource Center at Cornell Cooperative Extension in Sullivan County is assisting caregivers with education and support, including the 10 Warning Signs of Alzheimer's and Dementia program. Program coordinator Nancy McGraw is joining us this morning to tell us more. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming in. And tell us a little bit more about the Caregiver Resource Center. A lot of education, a lot of support for those folks who are providing care for others.
Right, exactly. A lot of people don't identify themselves as caregivers, but if you are providing help to someone in any way, whether it's a loved one, you know, a spouse or a child with a chronic illness, even a neighbor or a friend. Not just hands-on care, but you're running errands, going to the pharmacy, maybe helping with meals, transportation to doctor's appointments. You are a caregiver. So it can be stressful for caregivers, and we are here to support them with the Caregiver Resource Center. So Cornell Cooperative Extension operates the Caregiver Resource Center through an agreement with the Office for the Aging, and we have a partnership with the Alzheimer's Association as well. So we provide support groups both in person and virtually via Zoom for those who prefer that option twice a month, and we provide a variety of different workshops on Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. We're also looking at doing some other programming that's actually scheduled, and we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you've got a lot of programs coming up. The first one that we're going to talk about is coming up Monday, March 18th, about the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's and dementia. You know, it's something that affects so many people, and there's so many variations of how this could develop. So can you talk a little bit about that? And I think in some ways, just, I don't know, by being able to quantify it in this way, it does give someone an idea of like what to look for.
Right.
Rather than speculate.
The 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's and dementia is a good starting place for somebody who wants to learn more. And it is with a growing population that's aging, we're going to see this more and more. And so there are treatments available out there. Alzheimer's is one form of dementia. There are hundreds of different types of dementia,
which I think is important to know. Like we tend to group it into one batch, but there's so many other things. And so to be able to have some guidelines or guardrails or whatever you want to call it, roadmap, I guess, is a better way.
There are different warning signs, and you know, different stages from early to late stage dementia, and so it could be treated if it's caught early. People sometimes assume that as we age, we're going to normally lose our cognitive functions, but that's not necessarily true. That's not a part of normal aging. So we like to teach about the warning signs, you know, more than just forgetfulness, which is common, right? A lot of different things can cause forgetfulness. Being stressed out and overloaded with too many things to do can make you forget.
Well, if you misplace your phone or your keys, it may be because you're kind of stressed out. It may not be an early sign of this, but if it's I guess it's about the repetition and the other early signs. Can you talk a little bit about that and what to look for?
Right. Well, if someone obviously, you know, forgets occasionally what day of the week it is, that's not a big deal. But if they continually have to be reoriented to, like, what day is it? What month is it? What year is it? Or they, you know, sometimes we walk into a room and we forget what it was we were going to do. If that becomes persistent and pervasive frequently, then that's a sign to go talk to your doctor. If you cannot recall your schedule and what you're were planning on doing that day, need constant reminders. You know, a lot of people compensate by making lists and, you know, so they can hide the early signs pretty well by staying organized and making lists and doing different things. But if it becomes problematic to the point where it's almost an everyday thing, then that's definitely a warning sign.
And that's something a caregiver should pay attention to, right? Like the
yes.
habitual nature of this type of behavior that might be happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And our caregivers are in a good position because they know the people that they're helping to take care of the best. And so they're more likely to notice things than the doctor would, because, you know, the doctor's only going to see you once in a while, but your caregiver sees you all the time.
And what do you want people to learn from the Alzheimer's warning signs and healthy living sessions, that one that's coming up Monday? What is it you hope that folks take away from a program like this?
Well, I hope that they will learn the basics of the 10 warning signs and the differences between Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, what the risk factors are.
And you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, risk factors, you know, can be can include heredity, but not always. But a lot of other chronic illnesses, such as cardiovascular issues, heart disease, diabetes, high cholesterol, those kind of things can contribute because vascular health is connected to a healthy brain. And so if, you know, smoking is one risk factor that will significantly increase somebody's risk for dementia later in life, the good news is if they quit smoking, it reduces that risk to almost of a non-smoker. So we want people to know this, as well as a healthy diet and lifestyle, exercise. You know, the things that we talk about all the time to stay healthy can really help reduce your risk. So, you know, chronic illnesses and diet and lifestyle factors also are risk factors, as well as age. I mean, after age 65 and especially after 75, our risk goes up quite a bit for dementia and possibly Alzheimer's. And there are over 11 million Americans living with Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia. And most of the family caregivers are not paid for this. So it's a significant cost, but also contribution to the economy for caregivers.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Nancy McGraw. She is the program coordinator for the Caregiver Resource Center at Cornell Cooperative Extension in Sullivan County. There are several upcoming events designed to assist caregivers, offering information, education, and support for those who provide care to others. We're talking about the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's and dementia. That session is Monday, March 18th at 10:30 at the E.B. Crawford Public Library, which is an educational session, as we've been discussing, about those warning signs. Over 100 different signs of dementia or types of dementia, Alzheimer's just being one of them. And other risk factors and resources. You also have a community forum, which is coming up Wednesday, April 3rd. What is it in this forum that you guys are talking about, or you hope to impart upon folks that may be a little different? I think you mentioned that the 10 warning signs program is sort of like the basics of learning how this works.
Educational, right?
Yeah, and is this forum is a way of like just sharing with others?
The forum really is an opportunity to have Sullivan County residents speak to the folks from the Alzheimer's Association of the Hudson Valley chapter. They are coming to us and providing this forum, which is actually they're having throughout the Hudson Valley and other counties as well. So they're coming to us. They want to hear from the public what concerns people have about needed services and, you know, what is needed in Sullivan County for our community around dementia, memory loss, and Alzheimer's. We know that there's a few gaps in terms of what's available in terms of health care as well as social support services for older people. So this is your opportunity to come. It's at 2:00 at the Extension Building.
Also, you have the ongoing Caregiver Resource Center support groups, the virtual ones you mentioned. Those are biweekly on Wednesdays?
Yes, it's twice a month. It's usually falls every second and fourth Monday, but we have a calendar because sometimes, you know, depending on what's going on. But it is twice a month on Wednesdays at 4 o'clock. And we also have a caregiver cafe, which is in person.
Yeah. Yeah. And tell me about the caregiver cafe.
The caregiver cafe, we wanted to kind of give it a catchy name to make it more inviting. And, you know, we'll give you refreshments, coffee, tea, light refreshments. Sometimes we'll have a guest speaker if there's enough interest. But basically people come. It's on Mondays at 10 a.m. Twice a month. And we just had one this Monday. The next one's March 25th. And it's for caregivers of anybody that's would like to share with others or connect with others, get tips on managing the stress of caregiving. You know, managing the stress of caregiving is really important, both for the caregiver and for the person that you're taking care of. And the research shows that people that receive this support, it goes a long ways to help people remain in their homes as long as possible.
You mentioned the psychological toll. There is also an economic toll as well. You know, caring for another person, there are definitely challenges there. I know that there's a bill in Congress that is advancing through committee to help support families impacted by Alzheimer's. Can you talk a little bit about how important that funding is in terms of helping folks who, again, are finding themselves in a situation that they may not have expected to find themselves in?
The funding is critical and needs to be increased. You know, a lot of caregivers are also working full time, or they can be between the ages of, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and still in the workforce. And so many people may have to either retire early or start working part time, or have some kind of flexible working arrangement in order to continue caregiving. So the support is really important for folks.
And then also the legal aspect of it as well is something mm-hmm. we may not want to think about, but you definitely have to have your ducks in a row when it comes to how this impacts everyone's lives. So there's also a Rural Law Center workshop that you are putting out or hosting on the 19th of April.
Yes. Yes, we're very excited about this one because in partnership with the Rural Law Center of New York and the Sullivan County Office for the Aging, we're bringing this law firm here. It's a not-for-profit law firm that serves uniquely rural counties, 44 rural counties in New York State. And they're really far up north, but they're going to zoom in and do their presentation. And we're going to have both a hybrid option so people can come in person and watch, or they can also register on Zoom. It's really important for a caregiver to make sure that they have legal documents in place to make sure that their family is prepared. And this includes healthcare proxy, living will, power of attorney, you know, estate planning, how to apply for Medicaid and protect your assets and things like that. So there's going to be opportunities for questions and answers after the presentation.
Vitally important. And, you know, mm-hmm. having that together, you don't want to assume that that's there, or you want to make sure it's there so you're not, you know, stopped in the middle of something going on medically or legally. So very mm-hmm. important. Again, that's April 19th at 2. Is there like a particular story or someone that you've spoken with throughout this process of, you know, Caregiver Cafe and the community forums that you could share that stands out to you in terms of, you know, what caregivers go through and how important it is to have this support?
I think in general, you know, talk to a few people who just really appreciate the support of somebody to vent with or connect with or get ideas from, know that they're not going through it alone. Most of the people that I've encountered over the last few months are caring for an aging parent and maybe have had to make some lifestyle changes of their own in terms of their work, or have actually moved to be closer to their parent because there's nobody else that will be available to help them. And they're still living in their home. And, you know, lack of services and the isolation can be pretty difficult for older people.
Where can folks get more information about the programs that you offer that we talked about and just other resources? How can they get in touch with you?
They can call us at 292-6180. My extension is 122. Or they can go on the website and look at all of our events at sullivancce.org/events. And everything is listed there. But you can call us to register, and you can also email us at sullivancrc@cornell.edu.
All right. Nancy McGraw is the program coordinator for the Caregiver Resource Center at Cornell Cooperative Extension in Sullivan County. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, and good luck with all your technical issues.
We're going to make it. Well, let's try it now. We're going to take a break, I think, and be back with more. This is Radio Chatskill.
This is Thane Peterson, host of Living Jazz. Saturday at noon, I bring you 2 hours of the very best of the current jazz scene, along with a little bit of classic jazz thrown into the mix. It's wonderful music that will warm your heart and soothe your soul. Join me for Living Jazz, noon to 2 Saturday, only on Radio Catskill.
This week in This American Life, Jackson was bitten by a spider, a black widow, very poisonous. And he knew about spiders, knew he needed medical attention, but didn't do anything.
So I'm fishing while I'm mulling this over.
Wait, you started fishing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm there. There's the water. There's the net.
People who have not caught up to the reality that they're living in. That's this week.
Saturday at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Color of Thread is a textile art show at the Darby in Beach Lake, Pennsylvania. Artists Derek Maylander and Megan Udell are hosting an artist talk tomorrow. They caught up with culture reporter Valerie Manzi.
Well, good morning, Megan and Derek, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Hey, Valerie.
Hey, Val. Thanks for having us.
And it's wonderful to have you here, and I was happy to give you a tour of our beautiful new studio.
Very impressive.
Which you were very duly impressed by, so that always makes us very happy. So let's see. We are here to talk about a talk that both you, Derek, and Megan will be giving. It's an artist talk held at the Darby Hotel. It is on Thursday, March 14th from 6 to 8. And it's a textile show that's on display there. You are two of the six artists that are showing. And you will be talking about your works, and I assume about textiles in your work.
Yes, that's right. I think we both want to talk about our, so we're both going to be talking about our textile work and our personal practices and then our inspirations. And I think how we balance making art in the modern world with all of our modern responsibilities.
Such as?
You know, I think we both, both Derek and I have day jobs and, you know, I have a young toddler. And how do you make art while you are trying to make a living and balance family responsibilities and partners and pets? And how do you carve out time and just find time to do what's really important to you?
When you sort that out, let me know, would you?
I haven't quite figured it out, but yeah, it's just, you know, constantly making notes. I'm sure many, many people would like to know.
Yes. And how does, for each of you, how does textile inform your work? Derek?
I've actually been working with secondhand clothing for, I counted a few days ago, 22 years
that
at this
long.
Point. Yeah. Yeah. I'm that insane. Mm-hmm. And you know, it really didn't start out as a, like an inherent passion for textiles. I'm not someone who grew up sewing or knitting or weaving or anything like that. You know, it actually kind of found me like a stray cat. You know, I was doing some conceptual based work that led me to working with textiles, and for, you know, it was, you know, germane to a project I was doing, and the more I worked with it, the more interesting it got. And it continues to be that way. You know, the more I learn about it, the more interesting it becomes.
And your work is a lot of large sculptures, installations almost.
Yes. Yeah. My work is typically between 700 pounds and 2 tons. And so there's a lot of logistics involved. The most recent project I did in Jackson Heights, Queens, was I did a takeover of our public park, and we sort of upholstered the main lawn with secondhand clothing arranged in the spectrum, so going like a rainbow in a circle, kind of like a color wheel, you know, and it was 100 feet by 100 feet wide.
Whoa.
So, but that was, I think, a merely 350 pounds. So
merely. Okay. And where could folks see your work online to learn more about you?
Oh, I'm just Derek Melander everywhere. I'm a complete media whore, you know, absolutely.
Okay. And yeah. That's D-E-R-I-K?
It's actually D-E-R-I-C-K.
Oh, and, right. I'm sorry.
No worries. There's about 3 or 4 different ways to spell my name, probably. Right. And then it's Melander, MELANDER.com is probably the best place.
And you will have those sculptures at the event? No or yes?
No, actually.
I didn't think so.
No. I that would have been fun, but we decided to go in a different direction, you know, and I try to expand my practice and try different things all the time to keep it growing. And lately I've been doing rubbings of garments. So I lay garments down on a table and then lay drafting film over the top, and I do rubbings with crayons and watercolor crayons and do these various layered effects. And so those works are primarily what's showing at the Derby.
Okay. And am I correct that you had a show at Cass?
I did.
Some years ago?
Yeah,
yes.
I did. I had a really fun project at the temporary space while they were redoing the main space now, which started out as just being an open studio, but then it turned into an open studio with a solo show at the end, and then it turned into 2 weeks of classes with the Cass kids. And you know, Sally is amazing over there. They're just really ambitious, and it was a great project.
Good. Well, I look forward to seeing more of your work. And if I get to Queens, I'm going to stop by.
Yeah, you'll have to look me up.
Sure. And Megan?
So I kind of grew up making things and grew up doing textiles. I come from a long line of women textile creators. Like Derek, I also have a conceptual art background. And I kind of stumbled into merging both my love of textiles and conceptual art when I read this article about a group of women resistance fighters in World War II, and they would knit Morse code they would knit plans from the Allies into their knitting, and they would bike past the Nazis, and they would kind of leverage the invisibility of women's work to smuggle plans past the Nazis. And I, fun side story, I actually got my ham radio license when I was 7, and my father strongly encouraged me to get that and had me learn Morse code. And I was like, I both know how to knit and know Morse code, and this feels like a really great marriage of two very, you know, odd things to bring together. It was a strange juxtaposition. And I just started to create steganographic textiles, which is...
What is that word again?
Steganographic. People often ask me, they're like, steganography? And no, it's steganographic. It is the art of hiding messages in plain sight. So steganographic textiles is the art of hiding messages in textiles. So most of my work revolves around that. And my Instagram handle and my website is Remorseful Code. So it is a play on Morse code and sort of the remorse and
you know, emotional significance of the stories that we want to tell, but maybe can't publicly articulate them.
What will you be showing?
So I have a few different things that are up right now. I have a small series of embroidered ink drawings that are actually taken from nightmares that I've had over the years. A lot of my work is deeply personal, as I'm sure many people can gather. And then I have a series of watercolor, ink, and embroidery Rorschachs that are meant to evoke a little bit of topographical pieces. And then I have some larger soft sculptures that are they're very malleable, and they can be changed and hung in different ways and moved around. They're all interconnected, but really just depends on the environment and how people are feeling and, you know, how they want to exhibit them. So I'm really excited to see, well, I'm not really excited to see, but I'm really excited to see how people feel about the way that they are hung here versus the way that maybe they've seen them in the past.
I love those, Valerie. They remind, they're sort of like a plant or a pet, maybe.
Yes,
they're like the new fiber Tamagotchis, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
And Megan, you also had a show at DVAA of your work.
I did. I did a few years ago, peak pandemic. Thanks to everyone for coming out. We had the little embroidered face masks. It feels like a lifetime ago.
That is true.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great show, and it was sort of my first show in the region, and it was nice to find an artist community up here.
Well, it is here. And we in the community are so happy that you are here. And those who put together these events and work so hard to share the work of the many artists that are in the area and some out of the area. So I just want to thank you both for coming in and talking to our audience about your work and the event. And you said something about it being streamed.
Yes, yes. Summer Co. is going to be doing an Instagram live stream of the interviews, of the artist talks. And so you can just go to their place on Instagram, which is Somewhere Co. It's just Somewhere Co. SOMEWHERE Co.
One word. Yep.
One word. That's their handle on Instagram at the time of the event, and stream it there. So whether you can make it to Narrowsburg or not, you can listen in.
And I'd like to let the audience know that there are other talks coming up as well, artist talks of other artists in the exhibit at the Derby. And there's one on March 28th and April 11th, and we at the station will be following up on those.
Thanks for everything you do, Valerie.
You are welcome.
WJFF is awesome.
Love Radio Catskills. Thanks.
You're welcome.
That was culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking to textile artist Derek Maylander and Megan Udell. We'll take a break. And when we come back, comedy back in the Catskills. The New York Comedy Club and the Borscht Belt Museum are teaming up. We'll hear more after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Andrew Jacobs from the Borscht Belt Museum and Emilio Savone, owner of the New York Comedy Club, are launching a stand-up comedy series in Ellenville. The partnership is part of celebrating New York Comedy Club's 35th anniversary and its 10th year under Emilio Savone and Scott Linder's ownership. The efforts have expanded the club's reach and now include the partnership with the Borscht Belt Museum, bringing comedy back to the Catskills. And joining us on the phone now are Emilio Savone of New York Comedy Club and Andrew Jacobs from the Borscht Belt Museum. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning to you, Dan.
Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Talk to me a little bit about, Emilio, a little bit about this partnership with the folks at the Borscht Belt Museum and bringing comedy back to the Catskills.
Yeah, well, you know, we...
Did we lose you?
No, I'm here. Was that for Andrew or for Emilio?
For Emilio.
So it's I'm sorry, I'm hearing a little bit of my voice back. So let me fix it. But the initiative has been something we're really excited about because, you know, the New York Comedy Club brand, it's been around for a very long time, but under our ownership over the last 10 years, a big part of what we wanted to do is really to be able to bring the level of quality of comedy that we do in New York City, you know, outside of the city as well. So, you know, we currently have a comedy club in Connecticut, in Stamford. We run a comedy festival called the Connecticut Comedy Festival. So for us to be able to team up with Andrew and his team at the Borscht Belt and to be able to bring that kind of talent and really curate some really great comedy in that area is something that has been a really exciting thing for us. And to be able to work with Andrew's team has really been amazing as well.
Yeah, and Andrew, we've spoken before about Borscht Belt Museum and your efforts to highlight this great era in the Catskills. And so comedy, obviously essential to remembering and celebrating that. Tell us about this series that's coming up in Ellenville.
Well, you know, we've a big part of our mission has been sort of to highlight the kind of role that comedy played in the evolution of the Borscht Belt kind of resort era. So it was sort of a natural fit for us. I mean, New York Comedy Club, of course, you know, sort of legendary. We want to also, you know, in addition to their really great comedians, we also want to provide an opportunity for local comedians, up and coming talent, to have a venue where they could, you know, try out their stuff. So, you know, it's sort of a combination of sort of grassroots comedy and then also, you know, much more kind of high profile, comics. So it's just sort of a really natural fit for us.
And, you know, a natural fit, obviously. And then, Emilio, how do you go about choosing comedians for shows like this?
I mean, we have a whole development system at the club. You know, we're really one of those few comedy clubs in New York City that has a really nice blend of cultivating young talent, developing talent, and then also mixing in with some of the more established, bigger names. So any given night you come to the comedy club, at least in New York City, you'll see someone like a Jessica Kirsten, you know, someone like an Andrew Schultz or a Chris Stefano mixed in with someone that we have been developing for the last few years. So it's a nice, even-keeled, leveled lineup. So for us, it's really a matter of, you know, finding the right people that would really do well in that demographic and really represent the brand really well. And, you know, comedians, their biggest thing really is, you know, wanting to perform in different kinds of stages, different kind of demographics. So what we told Roster Comics when we were doing the Borscht Belt, I mean, we had a high demand of comics that wanted to do it because they understand the rich history and they understand, you know, the opportunity to be able to be able to perform in front of an audience that really hasn't been able to consume comedy on a consistent level that we feel like we're going to be able to bring.
Yeah, and historically, folks who performed the Borscht Belt, you know, got their start or achieved greater fame by performing here. It, you know, being in the city, being 10 years in with ownership of the New York Comedy Club, what's the state of the comedy in the city and in the business in general? I mean, New York really the heart of comedy.
Let me tell you, you know, COVID obviously presented a lot of challenges, but, you know, when COVID hit, you know, we really did everything that we could to kind of keep the line moving with our staff. So we were running rooftop shows. We were doing an outdoor comedy festival in Connecticut. You know, we have a lot of outposts outside the city. We also do things in Atlantic City as well. So we were in a very good spot to be able to not have to be fully shut down and really still kind of keep the line moving. So the second COVID ended, we really never missed a beat. I mean, New York has never been better in terms of comedy. I mean, to the point where we're actually opening a third location in Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we're continuing to grow. We're continuing to expand the brand and partner up with great people like Andrew and his team. And, I mean, the state of comedy in New York, and I cannot be more honest about this, has never been better. I mean, I'm currently in Austin, Texas, as we speak, for the South by Southwest Comedy Festival. Also, the Comedy Festival, Music Festival, Interactive Festival. And just comedy in general is just buzzing. I mean, it's really, really become kind of the new rock and roll, if you will.
Yeah, and I know that I think that comedians, despite, you know, the rise in streaming or the different media outlets, they really like to get out there on the boards and in front of an audience and perform and do their stand up. So, you know, Andrew having this stage now here in Ellenville, and then the connection with the Borscht Belt Museum, that's got to be providing a great cultural opportunity for folks in the area and these comedians. And then, as we said, like this historical perspective.
Yeah, and like, you know, just to add to what Millie was saying, I feel like this is the golden age of stand-up comedy. I mean, just from where I sit, looking at social media and all the live venues, it's really flourishing, and it's great to have Ellenville sort of get in on that phenomena. And, you know, our goal here with comedy is part of the larger piece of turning Ellenville into sort of a regional cultural magnet. You know, we have the museum, we have the Shadowland Theater, we have great restaurants, so we really want to lean into that. And, you know, we've already sold out the first show, 7 o'clock show. We have tickets left for the 9 o'clock show. But, you know, it suggests a really strong yearning for live events like this, for comedy. So, you know, the hope is if we continue to sell out, we'll make this a weekly thing and this will become a regular, event in Ellenville.
Yeah, it's got to be really.
Yeah, it's really piggyback off of what Andrew was saying is, you know, comedy is such a unique thing in that it drives people to a certain venue, right? It's random. Someone's going to walk by a comedy club and say, oh, let's go in there tonight. We're actually driving customers to the venue, and that really has a positive effect on businesses as well. You know, so, you know, not only will people come to a comedy show, they might go to a restaurant, you know, beforehand or afterhand, or really kind of help the overall economy. And we see that a lot, you know, in our neighborhoods where we are in New York City. Again, when COVID happened, when we reopened, they were ecstatic because we really do feed a lot of the neighboring businesses. Because, you know, people go to a comedy show again or look for a place to go before or after, or we're introducing them to a new neighborhood, like in Stamford, Connecticut, for example, or in the town. Stanford Town Plaza, all the restaurants, all the neighboring businesses are kind of feeling the impact of the customers that are coming to the comedy show. We're excited to kind of bring that kind of new audience, if you will, to Ellenville.
And the series is kicking off with Michael Hirsch, Jesse Agner, Rachel Williams, and Aiton Levine performing at Shadowlands 120-seat theater. As Andrew mentioned, the first show sold out. And so you've added a second show. That's got to be satisfying to hear. And hopefully more shows coming up in the next coming months.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we have planned. You know, obviously, that's what's called the showcase show. So there's two kinds of shows that we're going to be really curating. One's a showcase show where you'll get like a nice assortment of anywhere from 4 to 5 comedians. And then we'll be mixing in headliner shows where you'll get a little bit more of the, you know, established. I mean, Rachel and the comics that we have coming are all fantastic. They all, you know, have credits, been on TV, done stuff on SiriusXM. But then we'll mix in a little more of a household name comics, you know, with comedians like a Jessica Kirsten or a Judy Gold. So really kind of, again, giving the audience different ways to consume comedy. And, you know, there's so many ways to do it. You want to come one night to see some, a nice collection of comics doing quicker sets, we're going to have that. If you want to really kind of ease in and watch maybe one of your favorite comics perform for an hour, we're going to have that as well. So we really want to bring a diverse way of consuming comedy to the area.
Andrew, did you want to add to that?
I just wanted to also highlight that we have, you know, alternating with 3 local comedians, 2 Ellenville-born comics, Alejandro Morales and David Lonstein, and then a guy from New Paltz, Andy Egan Thorpe, and they're going to be programming alternate nights, and we'll have open mic nights. We'll have all kinds of
events where, you know, new, fresh talent can sort of give it a shot.
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, you know how Bethel Woods, where Woodstock concert was held, and people come back and revere those grounds. It's great to have, you know, comedy back in the Borscht Belt and the Borscht Belt Museum and New York Comedy Club partnering together to launch that in Ellenville. So thank you guys for that. Again, the information for that is at newyorkcomedyclub.com or borschtbeltmuseum.org. We've been speaking to Andrew Jacobs from the Borscht Belt Museum and Emilio Savone, owner of the New York Comedy Club, about the upcoming comedy series in Ellenville. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We're excited to be part of the community, and we're excited to really, again, you know, comedy is such a staple in every community that we're in, and we really want to cultivate a really, like, nice stable of comedians and also, you know, have some really top-notch entertainment for everybody in the area.
That's awesome. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Janice Adams with a preview of The Janice Adams Show. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting Daryl Hall plus Elvis Costello and the Imposters with Charlie Sexton, Saturday, July 20th. Tickets on sale Friday. Ticket information at bethelwoodcenter.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, we meet Toñita, the owner of the last Puerto Rican social club in Brooklyn, and learn about how she's fighting erasure with free food, free dance, and building solidarity with her community.
It's a place where we're allowed to come together. We're allowed to gather. We're allowed to be.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Janice Adams is the host of The Janice Adams Show, which airs on Radio Catskill every Saturday at 11. She's joining us now to tell us about a preview of an episode, her preview of her episode this Saturday, which is featuring an author of a book of greed and glory in pursuit of freedom for all. Janice, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, everybody.
Tell us a little bit about Deborah Plant, the author of the book, who is your guest on Saturday.
Well, she's really, you know, a kind of an every woman. This is a hardworking woman who's the editor of the New York Times bestseller, Barracoon, which is a translation of Zora Neale Hurston's work, an update of it. But she's also a person who, as a scholar and author and all of that good stuff, has been caught up in the criminal justice system because her brother has wrongfully been sentenced for life and is 25 years into his sentence in what is the notorious Angola prison in Louisiana. And so, as you'll hear in the introduction to this story, she brings us this book, and I kind of thought it was a really important interview to run this month, which is National Criminal Justice Month. And there's a lot that we should talk about and consider when we talk about National Criminal Justice Month.
All right, let's hear the clip, and then we'll talk a little on the other side of it about National Criminal Justice Month and some of the other topics and issues you're speaking to Deborah Plant about. Here's Janice Adams from The Janice Adams Show this Saturday with her guest Deborah Plant.
What does it do to you when someone you love is ripped from the family, charged with a crime, wrongfully incarcerated, and after nearly 25 years, continues to serve a life sentence without the possibility of parole in the infamous Angola prison, a national disgrace, despite evidence of his innocence and still protesting his innocence? After Deborah G. Plant, author of the book of Greed and Glory, In Pursuit of Freedom for All, is my guest today. Informed by her own experience, armed with her own skills as a scholar, author, and literary critic, with a master's and doctorate in English. Yes, this story could happen to anyone and has too often happened to too many Black everyman and everywomans. Deborah Platt takes moments that can bring you to your knees and give us a book to bring us to our senses, to bring us to knowledge of what is being done to thousands of people in our name as American citizens. Deborah Platt, thank you for your book. Welcome to the show.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for that introduction. That it's very sobering, and I'm really pleased to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
Pleased to have you. Grateful to have you. Let me ask you, who were you before your brother was taken, and who are you now?
Before my brother was taken, I think I can say you're just someone who really also had faith in the American system of justice to a certain extent. But as I talk about in the book, most of my understanding about the justice system was academic. And of course, you know, you have some kind of influence from what you see that's televised and that kind of thing. But then after my brother was incarcerated, even then I didn't quite get what that meant. It was over time when I was in a situation or in such a way that I could actually begin to think about how I could get my brother back. Then I began to really see what we were all caught up in. I didn't really get it until that moment.
And who are you now?
I'm someone trying to get my brother back. I'm someone who really has begun to understand this whole enterprise of enslavement, its roots, how it continues in different forms today. Someone who wants to help America to become conscious of the fact that we have become unconscious about how we lose our freedom. Freedom is such a vital aspect of the American conscience. And at the same time, we are not really present to what it means when that liberty is compromised, is taken indiscriminately, when we have so little say about what happens in terms of our personal sovereignty. I want us to understand that to the core.
Tell us about your brother.
My brother, he's a beautiful person. He has a beautiful soul. He's someone who grows in wisdom. He looks at his contribution to his situation. He reflects on that. He regrets what his responsibility has been in terms of being in the crosshairs of the so-called justice system. He's a loving person. You know, when we go to see him, and I say we, my family, friends sometimes, he's just so present to us. He's filled with gratitude. He's always, thank you for this, thank you for that. He takes nothing for granted. And he's been one of my biggest champions my whole life.
Is he older than you, younger than you?
It sounds like he's older, but he's actually younger. And that's the thing about Bobby is that he's 4 years younger than I am. But he has always treated me like his little sister.
And that is Janice Adams speaking to Deborah Platt, author of the book Of Greed and Glory in Pursuit of Freedom for All. She is Janice's guest on Saturday on The Janice Adams Show, Saturday morning at 11. Janice, you had mentioned before we heard from your conversation with Deborah Plant about National Criminal Justice Month and why it's important for you to have this conversation. And by the way, folks can hear the rest of that conversation Saturday at 11. But let's talk a little bit about the National Criminal Justice Month.
Well, in 2009, Congress established March as National Criminal Justice Month to promote awareness around the causes and consequences of crime, as well as strategies for preventing and responding to it. But when I look at it, I say, but what about the causes and consequences of over-incarceration, mass incarceration, and the system of race-based justice, which is really our system of race-based injustice, that dates back, honestly, to 1625, and is still rooted in a slave society.
And it's interesting that folks they're highlighting this month, but it also highlights all of the issues and problems we still face with it. What are some of the goals of having this month and the focus in this month?
Well, their goals are really to, as they say, promote awareness around the causes and consequences of crime. But our criminal justice system is enacting crimes against humanity every day with mass incarceration, with this over-incarceration. And I think it's important for people to know when I say 1625, I'm not just being generic or dramatic. Literally, in as quickly as I can frame it, when the first African Americans are forced here in 1619, there's no condition of slavery. They are the same as the whites who are brought from England as criminals, so-called. But these people have committed no crime. But they realize that looking different from the general white population, there's something unique about these people. They can't easily escape. And so the planters go to the courts, and the courts create, instead of the 7-year period after which you can get your freedom from indenture, when the blacks go to petition for their freedom, the courts create a crime of which the blacks can become guilty, be found guilty, and thus sentenced to another 7-year term. And the crime that the courts assign is the crime of being a heathen, not being a Christian in the European sense. So our race-based criminal injustice system goes to that root.
And during the month, you know, different stakeholders are trying to educate citizens on the impact of crime and the system and the importance of everything that's been going on. The folks at NAMI, in fact, are talking about the mental health part of it, mental health awareness from the National Alliance of Mental Illness. There are so many different factors. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to get into it, but I want to thank you for joining us today. And folks can listen to your show for more about this and other interesting, great topics that you bring us every Saturday. And guests, your guest this Saturday is Deborah J. Plant, author of the book Of Greed and Glory and Pursuit of Freedom for All. And again, the Janice Adams Show airs Saturdays at 11 on Radio Catskill. Janice Adams, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, that's all for this edition of Radio Catskill. And we'll be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your patience during our little power outage technical difficulties. We're making it work, and we appreciate your support.